Okay, and is it
Okay, stop.
recording? Ah, yes, it
Pause
is.
recordings, I guess
Yeah,
so.
yeah. Okay, so
Is it recording?
Yes, I think it is recording because there is the option of pausing.
Stop recording.
Okay, so then it must be recording. All
Yeah.
right. We move this out of the way. Okay. Oh, sorry.
Good. So, welcome everybody. This afternoon's field seminar. We are happy to have today Paolo Meda from Trento, who will talk about the semi-classical Einstein equations. But before he begins,
Yeah.
on that, we need to introduce him.
So, just a quick introduction. So, Paolo Meda is a he got a PhD in 2020 in Genova University with the supervision of Nino Zanghi and Nicola Pinamonti. So these are known people in general relativistic mathematical QFT and semi-classical gravity. And they, well, one of their most known results is the existence and uniqueness of solutions to semi-classical Einstein equations over cosmological scenarios. So this was a paper that appeared in Annales of Henri Poincaré. And these are his results. And then he is now a postdoc in the Trento University with Walter Moretti. And so there is also kind of known in this field. And he's now currently working on linear stability of semi-classical Einstein equations. And I think the floor is yours.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Angus, for the presentation and, I mean, for the invitation, of course, and I mean, for all and to all of you for being here. I mean, I'm a mathematical physicist, and but I mean, my formation is as physicist, so I hope that the talk I will give will be accessible more or less to you. So I mean, I managed to prepare a talk in such a way that it might be accessible also for people that are not so expert with those stuff that are very specific in my opinion. So I prepared a sort of introduction in the first step, and then I will present more or less my works. And essentially the table of contents of the talk are the following. I will give you an introduction, a brief introduction actually, about the topic, and then I will treat the first work, the first paper I made about semi-classical Einstein equations in with one of my two PhD supervisors, Nicola Pinamonti, and another collaborator, Daniel Simpson, that was also a collaborator with Jean Dresinski that I know he visited us you some times ago. And then I will the final part of the talk will be will be about my last published paper about linear stabilities of semi-classical gravity or semi-classical theories of gravity. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, but I didn't manage to present you the very recent paper I'm preparing now about the stability of Minkowski in semi-classical gravity. This is in preparation, and I think that the preprint should appear very, very soon. I will try to give you a brief sketch of the result, because I think that it will be very important in light of the previous results. But of course, without the preprint, I cannot enter the details. But then, I mean, I will give you more or less the core of the paper. Okay. Of course, please interrupt me in any moment if you have questions, comments, whatever you want. So I mean, feel free. Okay. Let's start with the introduction to the topic. Okay. The topic is essentially, I mean, the goal of the topic is essentially to describe the interplay between quantum matter and gravity. So you know that when you consider classical matter and interacting with gravity, you usually use classical Einstein equations to describe I mean, the space-time related to the matter, which generates the space-time. And on the other hand, you know that when you have a quantum field, a quantum matter field, you usually use QFT in flat space-times to treat those objects. Okay, the idea of the topic now is to consider a quantum field, for instance, a scalar field, which now propagates over a classical Lorentz space-time and non-flat space-time in particular. So in this sense, we are trying to model a theory in which there is a propagation of the quantum field over a curved space-time. And the idea in particular is to understand what is the influence of the matter field over the classical geometry. And in technical terms, it is called this influence is called the back reaction, in the sense that it considers the modification of the space-time induced by the quantum field, by the propagation of the quantum field. And the idea is that the semicircular gravity should study this back reaction, and the fundamental equations which should encode this back reaction are the semi-classical Einstein equations, in which they are essentially a modification of the standard Einstein equations, in which now the classical Einstein tensor is equated to the expectation value of the stress energy tensor associated to the quantum field. So in this sense, it is a real modification of the classical Einstein equations. But now the idea is that so space-times, which are solution of these equations, should contain the back reaction of the quantum field. In this sense, they should describe the interplay between the quantum matter field and the classical space-time. This is the idea of the topic. And of course, there are some caveats to treat these equations, because in this sense, we are considering classical spacetime, so any quantum gravity effects are neglected. So it isn't in this sense a fundamental theory to describe gravity, but it should be an effective field theory in a certain sense. And furthermore, we are equating something that is classical with an object that is quantum. So it is a stochastic object and with the fluctuation. So in this sense, if you require that these equations hold, then you must also require that in some sense the fluctuation of these objects are small in order to obtain well-posed equations. So there are some caveats about the validity of these equations, but in the end, you can say that at least in a certain physical regime, these equations are well posed. And they are, in particular, many different applications in physics. Probably the most famous result is due to Hawking, and it is about the Hawking radiation, so the effect for which black holes in semi-classical gravity in QFT or space-times seems to lose mass in time, and namely they evaporate in time. I have a paper about this topic. Unfortunately, I have no time to present you, but together with cosmology, black hole physics is the other main research field in which this stuff are applied, have a nice application. And then there is also cosmological applications of these equations, because again, people usually say that early universe is governed, it was driven, let's say, by quantum fields. So in the inflationary regime, the quantum fields had a strong effect on the evolution of the space-time. So it seems that such equations should help to understand the inflationary phase of our universe.
So okay. Let me ask again my question.
Of course.
So we see this equation, and on the left hand side we have a tensor, on the right hand side we have an expectation value.
Right.
And Karel Kulesh, for example, criticized this type of approach, saying that that's a scalar.
Right.
So, but if you just want to apply for black hole physics or cosmology, in these cases we have some privileged coordinate systems.
Right.
And then if you stick to those, then it's not a problem. So this is your approach here?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. No, you're perfectly right in the sense that, in this sense, what are you saying is a sort of, again, a limitation we have when we treat those.
So we don't want to do the homework.
Exactly. Yeah. I in particular will concentrate my attention in this kind of topic. So what is the idea? Starting from the point that more or less the left hand side of the equation is known, what we have to construct is the right hand side. And what is the idea? The idea is to consider the stress energy tensor of a scalar field, for instance, of a classical field, and then quantize the field, the scalar field in this case. And to do that, there are essentially different approaches. In my case, I usually use the algebraic approach in which the quantum field is viewed as a generator of a star algebra of observables. So in this sense, it is a sort of generalization of the standard algebraic approach for quantum mechanics. And now, I mean, the point is that this approach is well posed when you consider some kinds of spacetimes which are called globally hyperbolic. Globally hyperbolic means essentially that the usual propagators you meet in a classical classical quantum field theory, let's say, so retarded propagator, advanced propagator are well defined. And in this, those kinds of spacetimes are called global hyperbolic. And on this class of spacetimes, you can quantize, you can obtain the canonical quantization relations associated to the quantum field. In particular, in the free case, you can see that the canonical commutation relations between the quantum Klein-Gordon fields are proportional to the causal propagator. That is the difference between the retarded and the advanced propagator. So in this sense, on this class of spacetimes, you have a precise procedure to obtain quantum fields, in particular, in this case, on shell fields, which fulfills the standard Klein-Gordon equation. Okay, this is the case for a linear quantum algebra. Then we went when you want to study quantum standard quantum fields. There is a following step after that, because if you are considering semi-classical gravity, for instance, you must compute also quadratic observables such as the stationary tensor. You see that the stationary tensor is constructed over phi squared and the derivative of phi. So you need to enlarge your algebra observables in order to implement these quantum observables. And the point is that there is a way to that in curved spacetimes that is essentially the generalization of the normal ordering procedure in flat spacetimes. When you, let's say, in the Fock representation, you move creation and annihilation operators on, and you, in order to recover the big contractions and so on. So you, there is an equivalent a procedure which generalizes that procedure in flat spacetime that is called the normal ordering, and it is due to the existence of Hadamard states. Hadamard states are those states which, in some sense, generalizes the idea of the Minkowski vacuum state in flat spacetime, because the peculiar part of these states, of their two-point functions in particular, is that their singular part is called Hadamard parametric, and it is exactly the same singular part that you meet in the Minkowski vacuum state. So in that sense, the singular part is a universal, it is shared by the Minkowski vacuum state in flat spacetimes. So in thanks to this class of states, you have a way to construct normal order fields in curved spacetimes, or weak normal order fields, if you prefer, and by means of a point splitting regularization. So you take the two-point function of your Hadamard states, you subtract the Hadamard parametrics, so you are removing the divergence inside the two-point function, and then you can construct your quantum observable, for instance, the stress energy tensor, by applying a certain differential operator, which is constructed from the formal expression of the stress energy tensor. And the point is that this procedure is locally covariant because the Hadamard parametrics is purely constructed out of the geometry of your spacetime. So in this sense, you have a local and covariant procedure to obtain quantum weak observables. And the point also is that you can, in the case of the stress energy tensor, you can also obtain an expectation value that is covariantly conserved. That is, of course, a physical requirement, but it is essential because you want that TAB to enter the semi-classical Einstein equation. So you are forced to need a conservation equation for the stress energy tensor. The point is that thanks to this Hadamard procedure, you can obtain a well-posed expectation value. And finally, there is a point that I have to stress, is that this procedure is not unique. in the sense that when you apply this construction, you don't fix uniquely those renormalization observables, but there is a sort of freedom in constructing weak observables and in curve space times, and in particular for the stress energy tensor, you conclude that you have a list of finite renormalization freedoms for which two different weak observables can differ, and in particular you can see that these renormalization freedoms are proportional to the metric of your spacetime, to the Einstein tensor, and furthermore to other conserved stress tensors, which usually appear also in quadratic gravity theories and similar stuff. So this result is due to Hollands and Wald. They proved that there is a way to list all the possible renormalization freedoms for your observables, and in the case of the stress energy tensor, you obtain this list of renormalization freedoms. This is all essential. This construction is essential to obtain then the semi-classical Einstein equation. So all this axiomatic framework is crucial to obtain, to study then the dynamical equation for your space. Okay, this is the data. Of course.
Those on the previous slide,
yeah,
you said those expressions I and J.
Yeah.
Some the covariant divergence of them is vanishing.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. Right. You can also obtain those tensors in the Lagrangian approach by adding R squared and the squared phi tensors in the Lagrangian. They are the same. Yes. Okay. Great. So this is the introduction. I hope to manage to give you a sort of a sketch of the framework in which I'm working. Now let's turn out our attention in the applications, let's say in physical cases, and starting from the cosmological case. Okay, as I said, the space-time is classic, so the approach to consider the space-time is the usual in classical relativity, and in the case of cosmology, usually the space-time you choose to study the evolution of the universe are the Friedmann, Robertson, and Walker space-times, namely space-times which are constructed out of the following metric, in which there is essentially 1 degree of freedom, that is the scale factor of the universe. And I mean, in particular, you have different ways to represent the metric in terms of the cosmological time or the conformal time. The point is that the scale factor of your universe should describe the evolution of the universe in time. Probably the standard choice in cosmology to describe the universe. And in the modern cosmology, people usually use the so-called lambda CDM model, in which matter is, on the other hand, described by perfect fluid stress energy tensor, in which there is the density and the pressure. And in particular, pressure and density are the density of energy, of course, in which they are related by an equation of state, in which the coefficient between inside the equation of state describes the type of matter you are considering in cosmology. So ordinary matter, W is vanishes for radiation is 1/3, dark energy, namely for the cosmological constant you use -1, and so on. And that in this case, in the classical case, you usually study Friedmann equations, namely the Einstein equations evaluated on this kind of space times. And again, you usually describe the evolution in terms of these two into two equations. Okay, in our case, we want to study the semi-classical counterpart, and I mean the physical ingredient, the physical statement which justifies our approach is the fact that people usually argue that when you study the universe close to the Big Bang, quantum contributions should drive the expansion of the universe in those stages. And there are essentially several models about that. Probably the most famous is due to Starobinsky, which used a long time ago the semi-classical Einstein equations to obtain a model of inflation in which there was a De Sitter solution. So I mean, it is a well-known topic in this research field, and I mean it justifies why we want to study semi-classical Einstein equations in those contexts, essentially. Okay, and so we want to study this framework, cosmological framework in the semi-classical case. So in our case, we are interested in studying, of course, a quantum scalar field, so it fulfills the Klein-Gordon equation for arbitrary couplings. So you see that in the Klein-Gordon equation, there is also a coupling between the field and the Ricci scalar of your spacetime, in our case, the cosmological spacetime, and the parameter which measures the coupling is denoted by Xi. And the goal of our paper was to formulate an initial value problem for this cosmological evolution of both the space-time and the matter field, once a suitable physical state was chosen. And in this case, instead of using the standard Friedmann equations, we prefer to use an equivalent formulation of the problem in which the dynamical equation is provided by the traced semi-classical Einstein equations. And furthermore, if you do that, then you need to impose also a constraint, let's say an energy constraint of your initial data, which involves the quantum energy density of your quantum field. And the point is that if you have a conserved stationary tensor, you know then that these constraints also holds at any times greater than or not the initial time. So in this sense, once you have imposed this constraint on your state, if you want, then you can directly study the traced semi-classical Einstein equations. And the main problem of this formulation is this semi-classical formulation is that in striking contrast with the classical counterpart, this equation isn't a second order differential equation in time, but it is a four order differential equation. So in principle, you need four initial data on your scale factor in order to have a well-posed initial value problem. And we will see why in a while. But the point is that in principle, it is the scheme in which we want to work. And I mean, the goal of the work is to prove existence or uniqueness of cosmological semi-classical solutions for arbitrary couplings. And in particular, taking into account these four order derivatives of the scale factor, which appear in this dynamical equation.
Okay. This is also true for Xi equals to 1/6.
For 1/6, it is true, but there is a sort of miracle, let's say, because in that case, the four-order derivatives of A can be dropped by using the renormalization freedoms you saw.
This special method.
Yes, exactly. It is translating to this dynamical consequence. Yes. If you want to consider instead arbitrary couplings, that you are forced to consider all those critical objects. And you see these four order derivatives in this way. Just a brief comment about the energy constraint. The first result was that you can fix this energy constraint. Namely, there is a cosmological quantum state which satisfies this energy constraint. And in this sense, there are a class of quantum states in which you can fulfill these equations, and which are vacuum-like state in the sense that the two-point function are of this form. They can be treated in the spatial case using Fourier transform, and then you have two functions in time that are the modes of your two-point function, which satisfies a sort of harmonic equation in time. And I mean, the point is that you have different choices of vacuum states, like vacuum-like states, which can be used to fulfill this equation. And there are several choices, for instance, states of low energies, adiabatic states. So the literature is full of those states. So this is the first part of the paper, but it is not so important in the sense that people more or less has already argued that this energy constraint can be imposed.
Can I ask a question?
Of course. So,
In general, there is a strong requirement to accept that order equations in physics, because even with third order, we get Ostrogradsky type instruments.
Right. So that's a very important point here. If you agree, we can discuss in the second part of the talk, because there is a problem related to Modeste Ostrogradsky. Yeah, this is the point. Yes. At this point, we are only requiring that the physical state must set in order to obtain this energy constraint at this stage. Yes. Okay. What is the real problem of our model, of the semi-classical model, let's say? The fact that the dynamical equation we have to study, that is the trace semi-classical Einstein equations, is a complicated equation in the sense that many non-classical terms appear. First of all, you can see that there is a non-local contributions due to the quantum state, because there is the so-called, in physics it is usually called the vacuum polarization. So there is the expectation value of the Vic squared of the scalar field, and evaluated on your state. So it is a non-local object, because the state lives all over the space-time. So it is intrinsically non-local. And furthermore, there is a D'Alembert operator applied to phi squared. So it's a complicated object. There is the trace anomaly, that is the consequence of the fact that you have imposed that the stress energy tensor to be conserved. If you do that, then you are forced to consider in your equation also this anomalous contribution, which is constructed out of the geometry of your spacetime. So there is a tiny state, it is independent on the choice of the state, but it is non-vanishes in principle. And finally, there are the renormalization freedoms of your theories, of your model, let's say, which arise from the fact that the Vic observables are not uniquely defined. And in particular, you can see that the first two renormalization freedoms are essentially a renormalization of the cosmological constant and of the Newton constant. So these two guys don't give particular problems in the model. The real problematic term is the third one, the renormalization freedom proportional to the D'Alembert operator applied to the Ricci scalar, that arises from the two local tensors A and J, which I've already discussed. And the point is that it is a sort of quantum contribution, because if you consider the standard Einstein equations, these terms does not appear. So in this sense, it is due to the effect of the quantum field that you are treating. And then the point is that both this guy and this guy are contain higher order derivatives of A up to the So in this sense, this object contains up to the four order derivatives of the scale there. Okay, so this is the reason why we need the four initial data. Okay, so what is the idea of the talk, of the work? In order to get an initial value problem, we'll pose the initial value problem. The idea is to rewrite the equation in such a way that the initial value problem can be obtained. And in particular, we can prove that the semi-classical model admits a unique solution A in a small interval of time, given your initial data. So in this moment, I will discuss what is the idea to rewrite the semi-classical equation in this new form. And to do that, in order to simplify the analysis, I want to consider a semi-classical toy model, in which essentially we have phi squared of the quantum scalar field coupled with the classical scalar field. So in this sense, in this toy model, psi plays the role of the curvature of your spacetime in this toy model. And the idea is to consider this interaction, this Lagrangian interacting Lagrangian, that is the product between phi squared and psi. What is the idea? The idea is if you construct this object, this phi squared, in a perturbative way, there is a way to do that using perturbative QFT, using the Bokolyubov map in particular. Okay, let's drop the technical details. The point is that if you can construct the linearization of this object, in linearization in lambda in particular, you can see that you can prove that this is essentially due to the difference between the squared Feynman propagator and the squared point function of the vacuum state. And then if you I mean, if you truncate the expansion, this perturbative expansion at a linear order, and I mean, you compute explicitly this difference, then you find the following problem. You find, in particular, an unbounded iterator operator inside the linearized expectation value. Unbounded in the sense that this operator T is a tame operator. Namely, it cannot be controlled by the norm of the function, of the text function you are considering, but it can be controlled by the derivative of the function. And the point is that the norm cannot be fully controlled by f. And so in this sense, it is a problem, it is a mathematical problem that has a consequence, because if you try to construct a solution of this semi-classical equation by recursive procedures, for instance, those procedures does not converge, because the irregularity issue of this operator prevents to obtain a closed solution. The miracle at this stage is that unlike the T operator, the inverse T has nicer properties. In particular, the inverse operator can be fully controlled by the norm of F. And it is actually a miracle in our case, but I found out after writing this paper that is a property of those kind of tame operators. And there is a nice result due to Nash and Moser about the fact that this tame operator always admit nicer properties when you take the inverse. So in this sense, for a pure mathematician, from functional analysis, it is a well-known result. In our case, it was a miracle that the inverse was regular enough. But okay, after that, we discovered this nice property of Nash-Moser theories. And the point is that in our case, it is essential, because since there is this nice inverse operator, we can rewrite the semi-classical equation in this form, namely using the inverse formula associated to T. And in particular, if we apply this inverse formula and we rewrite the semi-classical equation in this form, now a solution exists and can be constructed, because now T minus one works as a contraction map. So you can use standard fixed point methods to obtain a solution. So the point is that in this new form, a semi-classical Einstein equation can give you a well-posed initial value problem. This is exactly the idea we used in the cosmological case. So in the cosmological case, there is the same procedure. I provided some technical steps. In particular, in order to obtain this result, we have to, remove some D'Alembertian operator, let's say, from the standard equation. After a partial integration, you can show that the trace semi-classical equation becomes, in the cosmological case, it becomes an equation for the derivative of phi squared. And then if you evaluate in the cosmological case this object, you meet exactly the same operator we have seen for the toy model. So in this sense, you see that this problem is quite universal, because it appears essentially when you are treating something that is semi-classical. So we are also confident that this tractation should be applied in other contexts, for instance, for black holes, if you study back reaction on black holes. And the point is that now, after analyzing that operator T, starting from this semi-classical equation in cosmological case, you can again apply the same inverse operation and then obtain a new cosmological equation which involves the inverse of T, and then this equation admits a well-posed initial value problem. In this case, the variable, let's say, on which we are applying the formalism is essentially the Ricci scalar of your space. So this is the second derivative of A. And thanks to this procedure, we have the result of the paper, which is essentially the well-posedness of the initial value problem in the cosmological case. In particular, we can show that if you fix some initial data and a sufficiently regular state, which fulfills the energy constraint we have said, then you can obtain a unique solution in a small interval of time. So essentially, this is the main result, and probably it is the first real result in which it is proved that you have a way to prove a well-posed initial value problem for semi-classical Einstein equations for arbitrary couplings. So, I mean, it is, and I think it should be quite relevant in the topic. Okay, now in the second part of the talk, I don't know if I time is it
if great.
We need to tell something about the behavior of the solution.
Exactly, that's the point. That's exactly the point. It is connected to the problem of orthographic error. Yes, because at this stage we haven't, we haven't a proof about the form of the solution in a small interval of time. For instance, one can be interested in the global behavior, so for large times. And this is the point, because there is a recognized issues in semi-classical theories of gravity, which were posed in particular by Wald and Horowitz some time ago, about the existence of runaway solutions of semi-classical gravity. Namely, people usually argue that those kind of semi-classical theories seems to include essentially unstable exponentially growing solution in time. So when you treat you study your solution, you try to construct your solution, maybe you are able to obtain good, well-behaved solutions in a small interval of time. But then if you try to study global solutions, so studying the behavior for large times, people usually say that you meet this class of unstable solutions, which are essentially unphysical, because they are unstable in the sense that people usually say let's consider the metric in a perturbative approach and linearize in particular the metric, so consider a background metric plus a perturbation, that's consider, for instance, the Minkowski metric for simplicity. The point that is that people usually say that there are always a class of solutions for which H becomes dominant over the background for large times. So in this sense, it means that the perturbation becomes dominant over the background, and then the background becomes unstable because the perturbation becomes dominant over it. So in this sense, there is a fundamental problem, let's say, in this case, in the sense that people say, okay, maybe you have a solution, but you have to understand if the solution is also runaway in that sense. Okay. Okay, this is one, yes. And people sometimes say also that this problem is related to the orthographic theorem, because since you have higher order derivatives, this is a reason why you find also this kind of unstable solution. So in this sense, the orthographic theorem in this context should appear in this case, in this moment, let's say.
What usually people do is that they do the trick, like when we go from Lagrangian to Hamiltonian description,
yeah. So
we introduce new variables which are derivatives of the fields,
yes.
And then what we get is that the kinetic term is negative.
Yeah, right, exactly. In the quantum case, here people say there are ghosts, so fields which have a negative kinetic term, yeah. And they are essentially related to this notion of unstable solution, which grows exponentially in time, at least to my knowledge. So they are related in this sense, I guess. Yeah. And so, of course, this is a crucial problem for us because, we have a solution in a local interval of time. But the point is that, this solution is physical in the sense that can be also global solutions, namely, does it suffer of those kind of unstable solutions? And of course, it is a problem because if you want to describe the universe, you cannot admit runaway solutions, otherwise the universe should explode at a certain time, that it's not what you want. So, that's the problem. And to address this problem, we study the issue of stability using a semi-classical toy model. So we recover, you use the same approach we have seen for studying T, the operator T. And in this case, we have again the same quantum massive scalar field plus a classical scalar field, but in this case we consider a more complicated, let's say, semi-classical equation, which is of this form. This form is not random. The effect is this equation, if you label psi with the curvature of your space, in particular with the Ricci scalar, then this semi-classical toy model equation mimics the traced semi-classical Einstein equations. So in this sense, this toy model is useful to study, to understand the problem, for instance, cosmological cases, because the semi-classical toy model equation mimics exactly that, that equation. Ah, there is a crucial point. People like Wald and Horowitz argues and show instabilities for massless fields. So they consider a massive quantum scalar field, quantum field, scalar or Maxwell field, and they notice these exponential growing solutions. So this is a point. This is a crucial point because in our case we are working with massive scalar field. Okay, then remembering that people usually linearize the metric, so they consider a background cluster perturbation, we follow the same approach in the sense that psi plays the role of the space-time curvature, so we decide to linearize this psi and consider a sort of background solution psi naught plus a linear perturbation. And the idea is to quantize phi in terms of the background, so in terms of phi naught, and then study the interactive field theory associated to the perturbation of psi 1. And in two simplified analysis, which we chose a background a constant background field psi naught in a similar way as we are studying the Minkowski vacuum state, in the sense that psi naught might be the curvature of your spacetime in the flat case that vanishes, of course. So this is the analogy between the two models. And I mean, based on this, we studied the semi-classical equation and at the linear order, and we compute in particular the linearized big squared, and that is the same object we have already seen, namely the difference between the squared Feynman and the squared two-point function. We treated this object in using the spectral Kalman-Lehmann representation, so one can show that Ka is an integral of retarded propagators, and in particular, there is in this construction there is a parameter A which encodes the renormalization freedoms of this object. Again, I have no time to discuss the details. The idea is that the squared Feynman propagator is not defined on the diagonal when you treat it as a distribution. So you need an Epstein-Glaser normalization procedure to extend delta F squared over diagonal. And when you do that, essentially you obtain this free parameter that is compatible with the renormalization freedom. So we have said for the big observables. So in this sense, this object is fully compatible with the construction of the phi squared on the vacuum state, a la Hollands and Wald, let's say. Okay, then we studied the semi-classical equation. In particular, we studied the semi-classical Einstein equation with the source F. So we added a classical source term in the equations. And in particular, we noticed that the equation we had is a real semi-classical equation in the sense that it is a four-order differential equation in psi 1, because you can notice that there is a D'Alembert operator applied to K, and K contains the D'Alembert operator of delta R. So in this sense, with respect to psi 1, this is a real four-order differential equation. So it mimics essentially the real semi-classical Einstein equations. And the result of our paper is the following. We showed that the equation is hyperbolic in the sense that if you consider past compact solutions, they are causal, in the sense that the support of psi 1 is contained in the causal future of the support of F. So it means that the solution propagates go ahead in time, let's say. And then we found the retarded fundamental solution, namely the retarded propagator associated to these four-order differential equations. And we prove also that past compact solutions constructed out of these retarded fundamental solutions decay to zero at large times. So in this sense, you can avoid runaway solutions because the perturbation you are constructing in this sense are well-behaved. They decay to zero at large times. So they do not explode, let's say, for sufficiently large times. And finally, we also show that as a consequence, that the semi-classical equations we are considered at the beginning, namely with the vanishing F, the well-posed initial value problem. So in this sense, you can formulate again for this linear equation a well-posed initial value problem after imposing some standard initial data on your classical fields. And for a wide range of values of the coupling parameters of your model. at this stage, lambda 1, lambda 2, G1, G2 haven't any physical meaning, but again, there might be a correspondence between these parameters and the cosmological parameters, for instance. Just to understand if... I prefer to skip the technical details about the two theorems. So this is the more or less the result. You can see in particular that we have an explicit form for the target propagator associated to this equation. And in particular, we have also an explicit form of the solutions for the homogeneous case. Namely, we can prove that the solutions of this semi-classical equation are in Fourier transform, are of this form. And you can see that they are essentially Klein-Gordon-like equation, wave equations, because there are complex exponential factors, and these frequencies depends on the choice of your coupling constants, but they are positive, so they are complex, well-posed complex exponential, and in particular psi one is a Klein-Gordon wave in the end. And in particular, thanks to this form, we have also an estimate of decay of psi one in times. So this is essentially the main result of the paper. And as I said, it has a sort of physical application, because this equation we have studied is sort of mimic of the semi-classical Einstein equations in the traced case, which we have used in the cosmological problem. So in this sense, you can see that if you consider psi one as the Ricci scalar at the linear order, let's say, and you label your G1, G2, lambda with the corresponding parameters, physical parameters. For instance, G1 is associated to the inverse of the Newton constant. G2 is the parameter which enters the Boxart terms. Lambda 1 is the mass. So if you have, if in this formal correspondence between our toy model and the cosmological model, there is a similarity between our equation and the traced equation. And so in this sense, we can guess in a certain sense the stability of the space-time, because we can say that it is, of course, it isn't a proof, but I mean, since we have this result in the toy model case, maybe there might be a similar result also in the cosmological case, thanks to the similar behavior of the two equations. It is essentially the starting point of my current analysis, because now I'm essentially studying the linear stability of physical space times according to the result I obtained for the toy model. And in this moment in Trento, I'm studying, instead of the cosmological case, I'm studying the flat case. So I'm trying to prove the stability of linears or in the linearized case of Minkowski space time. So the idea is to consider the back reaction of massive quantum field over the space-time, over the Minkowski space-time, to prove that the corresponding semi-classical Einstein equation in the linearized regime are well posed, namely, they do not give runaway solutions. The point is that the proof seems to work because because we are considering a massive quantum scalar field. So thanks to the mass of the field, we are able to show that the linearized equation, also Wald considered, admits stable solutions and runaway solutions are ruled out. And in particular, the result of the paper is that we can prove that the classical gravitational waves in the radiative gauge, namely taking the vanishing trace of the perturbation, are the unique solutions of these linearized equations. So in this sense, we are recovering the classical gravitational waves even for the semi-classical Einstein equation. That, in my opinion, is a good result, because, of course, for a physical requirement, we need that the classical gravitational waves should be solutions of those equations. The point is that until now, people say, okay, you might obtain gravitational waves, but also runaway solutions. So the point is we should be able to obtain a unique solutions of this equation, and in the same moment that we are able to avoid runaway solutions. So in this sense, Minkowski space-time should be stable under small perturbation measures. Okay, of course, the paper is which contains the proof is in preparation, so I cannot enter the details, but I think it should appear very, very, very soon. So stay tuned if you are interested. And okay, I'm finished. This is the summary of the talk. So we have discussed the fact that we have a way to prove the existence and uniqueness of solutions of semi-classical equations using Banach-Fick's point theorem. We have seen that there is this inversion procedure to obtain the well-posed initial level problem. And furthermore, we have also discussed the linear stability of semi-classical solutions that in principle can be achieved for massive fields. And as I said, based on those results, in this moment I'm studying those topics. In particular, I am proving the linear stability of Minkowski. Furthermore, the idea would be studying the stability also for cosmological space. That in this sense, the final idea would be obtaining a sort of theory of cosmological perturbations in semi-classical gravity based on the result of stability we expect, let's say. Okay, so I finished. So if you have a question, please ask me whatever you want. Thanks a lot for the attention.
Okay, thank you very much. Very nice. So I see we have some
questions. Of course.
The choices of the renormalization.
Yeah.
Any meaning from the solution? Could you tell me something, any particular numbers or functional relations?
Yeah, essentially, the choice is related to the cosmological constant that you study when you study the Minkowski vacuum state, the zero order, and then the choice of the constant which appear when you construct the stress energy tensor, these two ones, alpha and beta. Alpha and beta, there are the two other cosmological constants which you have to manipulate in order to, you have to choose in order to obtain stability. So the result is essentially based on choosing.
You choose them as a particular number, so a range or?
Hey, we have ranges. So in this sense, we can say that there is a sufficiently wide range for which this stability also, and there isn't. According to semi-classical gravity, the value of those constants should be given by experiments. So in this sense, maybe you can say they are positive or negative, but the value should be fixed. So the theory is fundamental. It cannot say anything about the precise value of these two. You can only say that, okay, your equation, you have these parameters and they must be fixed either by a more fundamental theory or otherwise by experiments.
Or we impose some unique condition.
I know that, for instance, people who work in asymptotic safety, for instance, has some criteria to fix those parameters in some sense for UAV competition and other stuff. Yes, but okay, I don't know basically anything about that. But the point is that you need something else to fix them. Yeah.
I wanted to ask a related question about the number, this coefficient of the conformal term. Are there any strong reasons to believe that this is not the conformal value?
Based on observations, you say,
either observations or any physics arguments.
Okay. Probably, people tend to avoid the conformal case because in that case you do not obtain higher order derivatives. So in that case,
is it actually a benefit?
Yes, it is a benefit, but the people might say that if you neglect higher order derivatives, you are losing some non-classical effects of your theory. So in this, since you are dropping the higher order derivatives, you are reducing your equation to more or less to the idea of the standard.
Classical.
Classical, exactly. So the idea is to have something that contains both the back reaction of the field, so the non-local contribution, and furthermore, the higher order derivatives term.
So that's the first term is by...
Right, exactly. The point is that if you consider xi equal 1/6, for instance, this steps drops in the trace. So you see that in that case, the equation simplify a lot.
And you know, why I'm asking, because in the standard model, I mean, generic relativistic,
classical, yes.
The standard model over GR, all the kinetic terms, except maybe for these scalar things, are known to be conformally invariant.
Ah, I see.
So it would be rather strange that there is one of the fields
named that are not
that whose kinetic term is not.
I see. I see. No, I see your point. I don't know essentially because again, one should, in my opinion, say that again, even xi should be a free parameter that must be fixed by a fit, let's say, in a certain case. What I can say is that this simplification about xi appears in the traced equation. So this miracle about for which you can reabsorb this contribution is only due to the trace of t. So if you consider the full stress energy tensor outside the trace, you might have in a similar way a higher order derivatives. The point is that the trace semi-classical Einstein equation is yet a semi-classical dynamical equation. So for cosmological space, like for instance, it is sufficient to study that equation without studying the entire quantum stress energy tensors. In that sense, yes. There is another question.
Yes. So on the last slide before the conclusions, you showed some result. Before this.
Yes.
So yes, we have the statement about the gravitational waves.
Yes.
Right. So this is flat space time.
Yes, it is flat space time.
And you look for perturbation, but then you have a wave equation for gravitational waves with the solution of which is a regarded general part of without any field. So this H refers to the retarded part.
Yeah, right. So essentially it means that H, the transverse traces part of H fulfills box H equals zero. So it is the standard gravitational wave. So the point is that if you evaluate this equation, that case, that form of H is a solution of this equation that is a non-local with higher order derivative. Yeah,
the generic solution is a sum of a retarded one, which includes the quantum field.
In that sense.
And the other one, which is the solution of the homogeneous equation, that doesn't have any information from the field. If you do this analysis, I suppose that it should refer to the retarded part.
Of course, the point is that we are considering the retarded part of the gravitational wave, let's say. I didn't see your point in the first stage. So thanks.
More questions? Don't see any, so let's thank our speaker again.
The recording.
Yeah.
And with that, we are close today's seminar. Thanks for coming.
Okay, stop recording.